Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, as I said, we'll look at the business stories making this morning's papers. Delighted to be joined by Susan Hayes Culleton of Hayes Culleton. And of course, she's also the positive economist. We're also joined by Rebecca Harrison, the managing director of Fishers of Newtown, Mount Kennedy, that great business down there in Wicklow. So we'll start with a big tech outage yesterday. Susan, I don't know, like reading the coverage of this, looking at the impact that this airlines, banks, transport sectors all hit by this Microsoft outage. And it got us thinking about really how vulnerable we are when we've got all our technological eggs in one basket, so to speak.
I mean, our lives are becoming more and more digitally reliant, all right, Bobby. Now, I will start off by what did this mean for people? If you're here in Ireland, as Ciara O'Brien, Jack White and Joe Brennan in the Irish Times tell us, it would have affected people who are updating leap cards or topping them up. Also, people who are applying for NCT car tests, people who are applying to also renew their driver's license, and people who are watching Sky News.
Or people flying Ryanair.
In particular. And that's what I was interested here by what Owen Maloney was talking about. I wasn't in the airport myself yesterday, but he said long lines formed at airports in Ireland and elsewhere, as many airlines had to process passengers manually, with some issuing handwritten boarding passes. I don't think, Bobby, I've ever in my life seen a handwritten boarding pass. But the greater point here, I think, that we need to take into consideration is exactly your point, is about the reliance that we have. Like, it made me think about how, as business people, do we consider our cybersecurity, or in fact, internet reliance robustness at all? And usually we do when there's a problem. So my clarion call here this morning is, if you haven't already, reach out to your local enterprise office and ask them about the Digital Start support, because that is a support that's available for businesses and it's provided by the government, where they'll open up that door for you to be able to analyse that and look at a range of other things as well. One other thing, though, that I just wanted to mention is, as I was reading around this topic, is that this CrowdStrike, they are the provider of choice for 62 of the Fortune 100 companies. 29,000 companies use their products, and also they're the second largest company in global enterprise endpoint security market, just after Microsoft.
And I see their share price was hit pretty drastically yesterday, and they are a business that many of us were unaware of until yesterday, Rebecca.
Yeah, I think that was something that Adrian Rechler said, and I think it's interesting. So that if it had been one of the big boys that we know about, Microsoft itself or Amazon, that, you know, there would have been huge outcry of fines being issued and whatever else. Whereas because they're maybe that little bit less well known, maybe they'll get away with it a little bit more than some of the other people will. And I suppose they're providing, they're one of the biggest provider of this type of security. And, you know, it wasn't a security breach. So I think that that is sort of the basic, but it doesn't take away from the impact that it has made on some people hugely. And I think we've got away very lightly in Ireland with it.
Let's go to, we always, in times of technology crisis and technology issues, we always go to our go-to man, Andy O'Donoghue, and I believe he's standing by on the phone. Andy, how are you?
I'm good. Morning, Bobby.
Thanks for joining us as always, Andy. Interesting here that if we consider cloud services and they're connected in a chain, and that was really what happened here yesterday. Is that right? That one thing is connected to something else, which is connected to something else, and the whole thing grinds to a halt.
Well, I think in general with software as a service or as cloud services that we buy and that we use these days, that's always kind of the challenge and the problem, in that, you know, the people who provide the servers are connected to people who provide security. And then there are people who drop in compressed video or television images, and all of these services work together. And most of the time, we don't even know what we're using or who it's made by or even where it comes from. The problem is that on days like yesterday, when something happens that disrupts that, and so many people would use CrowdStrike and have CrowdStrike protection on their PC, they don't know it because it's offered by a service provider.
Yeah.
What the complexity about yesterday's problem, Bobby, is that it's a security company. CrowdStrike are one of the world's, and as your guest was saying, lesser known name. very important in the industry and a publicly quoted company and a big one. Yesterday, what happened was that because they make antivirus software, that software has to act when you start the PC before anything else happens, before anything has a chance to take control of your computer. And so what the software that became corrupt, the software with the error, is initiated or it starts up the moment you turn your PC on. The problem with that is it means that your PC can no longer connect to the internet to get an update that can be sent out by a cloud provider like CrowdStrike. And so this is a huge problem, Bobby, and it is a huge financial burden potentially on small businesses. Big companies have the wherewithal and they also have the resources to be able to hold somebody to account for this. A small company of one or two people is okay. But if you have an SME of 50 to 200 people, this probably means that somebody will have to go from desk to desk and repair the damage that has been done.
All right, Andy, good to get your take on it. Thanks for joining us and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Bobby.
Okay, now back to the matters at hand. Tempting as it may be, the government should resist calls for a giveaway budget, Susan. Simon Harris saying you always give away in a budget, but being slightly facetious, I'd suggest.
It's an interesting take, all right, that this piece has, where it looks at there's a difference between giving away money and spending it. And of course, we all know, or certainly people of a certain age anyway, we all remember that phrase, if I have it, I'll spend it. And is there shades of that coming in here? So basically, to give you the numbers here, what is being planned at the moment is an $8.3 billion budget giveaway, to take that term. 6.9 billion will be in increased spending and a further 1.4 billion in tax cuts. And further, to delve more deeply into that, current or day-to-day spending will increase by 5.5 billion. So there has certainly been calls here for the government to act more prudently than it is. We are in a very strong position, like with an enviable budget surplus. We're in an environment where we've got full employment in the country, etc. I mean, obviously, this conversation doesn't have to go very far before we get to one of the biggest issues in Ireland today, which is housing. And when you look at that, obviously, there's a lot of people saying that there's a huge amount of money needed for this. Where I would stand on this is my message to Simon Harris in this would be is that, yes, we are in an enviable position made up of a government budget, government surplus. However, we do have to look at where that money is coming from, like corporation tax, right? That's the one that everyone talks about. But let me just put this in context with just three numbers. Last year, we took in 23.8 billion in corporation tax. Now, a third of that comes from three companies, Bobby.
Right?
Now, that equates, if we work that out, that works out at 7.8 billion, which is the amount we're spending on housing. So the amount that we're spending on housing, which is the biggest issue, comes from three companies. Like when we look at, say, the reliance on things like child benefit and so on like that, this is the problem, is that it's great. Yes, it is there. And if there is a threat to that, that is, of course, then where do you get that money? And again, we've all been around long enough to know where taxes can come from in a hurry.
And we might have a look at that a bit later when we look at the implications of a Donald Trump presidency. Becky, the same piece in the Irish Independent tells us about inheritance tax. And again, it is kite flying season. And this cut in inheritance tax is likely to appeal to a certain type of voter, we're told, but only affect a very small percentage of the economy.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're talking about that this piece, and it's in a couple of the different papers, this focus on the inheritance tax. But actually, this is being a sort of a cross-party positive. They're all pushing in the same direction rather than fighting against it. And you're right, it's going to appeal to a particular cohort. It is small, I think. Let me find the figure. It's only a very small percentage of the tax.
3%. Let me see.
Thank you. and it is interesting. And the other thing is that they're talking about obviously increasing reducing the rate. It's currently 33%. Looking at reducing the rate and increasing the threshold. So increasing the threshold from 335,000 to 400,000. I thought it was interesting that looking at comparisons with other countries, so looking at France, it kicks in at 100,000, so a lower threshold, but it's on a sliding scale. And I think that might appeal to the masses, if you like, more, where you have house prices, you know, in that range of prices. And obviously then inheritance tax, you've different rates depending, or at different thresholds, depending on your relationship with the person. Who is
Just on that, Susan, like, this is a kind of a blunt taxation in the terms that, you know, for example, an only child could be heavily discriminated, or somebody living in Leitrim versus Dublin 4. Mm-hmm. You know, the same logic is applied to properties in both jurisdictions, which may have very different valuations.
Oh, very different. I mean, I looked today, like the median valuation of a house today in Ireland is €330,000. I think that both pieces are missing a big point here, and that is that, first of all, the Irish Times did a survey. 50% of people think that the family home is outside of inheritance tax, and it's not. But the second thing here is that, think about what it's like to go through a family debt. And then you've got the trauma of selling the family home. If the family home is not sold, where does the money come from, Bobby?
Yeah.
This is the point, is that people think that inheritance tax means that you inherit money. You don't, you inherit an asset. So if you inherit an asset and then you don't have the money to pay for the inheritance tax of that asset, where does the money come from? And then that can lead to a very, very painful decision at a very, very painful time. I personally think it's not as blunt as it looks, because I think really, Becky, the point of actually lifting it to 400,000 is more of a relevant point. And I do want to point out that this is only for Group B. Now, if somebody is married to another person, tax doesn't apply at all to those assets. Now, if you're not married, that's where, as Sinead Ryan points out, you could be in for a shock here. But this is only between parents and children that this particular rate is referring to, or in other nuanced cases as well. So the point of the matter is here is that I think that there's a lot of people in the country don't actually realise the value of the family home, because, of course, it hasn't been transacted. And also, I noted here as well that there has €727 billion is how much property is worth in Ireland today. I think that will affect more than the nuance of particularly the second piece here. I don't think that it's totally for favouring the needs of few. I think it could definitely affect more than people think.
Yeah, and I also think that... feeding into this is the rise in value in Irish houses and Irish property. That's been rising all the time, but the rate of inheritance tax has stayed the same now for quite a number of years.
And I think that's the nub of the issue. The other thing as well is that, again, there's this constant focus around the wealthy, and fair enough, we can talk about that. But however, housing accounts for 74% of the total assets of those in the bottom five and middle four deciles of people in the country. So this deserves a different perspective than it's been given, in my opinion.
Okay. Let's move to commercial property, if we can, Becky. Joe Brennan has an interesting piece in today's Irish Times. Basically, they're saying that the shopping mall sales set a floor as Dundrum, $600 million Dundrum loan looms. Slumping prices come as occupancy levels still remain high. So just, it is interesting. He gives us a very good analysis of different shopping centres and what they were worth at different times. And this is a sector that has suffered hugely in terms of being devalued.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one. And it's really interesting to see the sort of peaks and troughs over the last number of years with how it's gone from this boom of shopping centres, you think, when Dundrum opened, and how, you know, it was welcomed with fanfare, and the prices that the shops had to pay for the rental inside, never mind for the development as a whole. And obviously then you have the ups and downs over the last number of years, particularly with COVID. I love how this story starts with the sort of anecdotal anecdotal piece with developer Sean Mulryan. Found himself amongst friends of his daughters as she celebrated her birthday. They talked about their outfits. All of them had been purchased online. And that was his catalyst to say, right, we need to get rid of our portfolio of shopping centres. Now, whether that's true or not, he did dispose of them over the coming years in the mid sort of 2010s. So that is an interesting one. But yeah, just looking at the headline is about the Dundrum shopping centre and the pricing, and it applies to Blanchardstown and to Liffey Valley, who have all sort of changed hands in the last number of years, and just going from huge things. So if we look at, let me just have a look at the figures here.
Well, I'll help you with that, Becky, if I may. If you take the Square shopping centre, right, in 2007, it was valued at $640 million. 2018, it was down to $250 million. 2023, $170 million. And there's a bid in, I think, in 2024 for $122 million. Yeah. Like, that is a staggering fall.
It's a huge
in
fall.
Value.
And that particular one, so AIB, which own 140 million worth of it, so they're going to get have to take a haircut on their investment. UK finance house M&G, who would have been a junior lender, will lose their entire investment on that.
What the bit that for me on this is that if you look at that valuation of that example that we took there, Susan, rents haven't come down in anything like a parallel to this. So rents have gone up as values have plummeted.
Yes, they have. And two things stand out to me about that. One is the fact that we're now seeing CBRE is highlighting the fact that rental yields on malls hugging the M50 is up 30% from 6.5% to 8.5%. So, Becky, as long as they can hang in there, like the income is there to be received. But the other thing, too, that I found really interesting in this piece is that occupancy levels at the M50 centres are currently running at 94%. That's compared to 89% in Dublin Prime Streets and almost 100% across retail parks. As the change, as this property is orientating towards entertainment and food and so on like that. So it, I think that this is the predictive and analytics here is to watch is that who will be taking these places? If it's not retail, who will be? And how do they reshape these as places to actually go?
Yeah, yeah. No, very, very interesting. And it's by piece by Joe Brennan in today's Irish Times. Staying with said paper, the interesting acquisition happening today, Becky, Pure Ever Industries, they're acquired a business called Ardmac. These are significant businesses, one of which I was certainly unaware of.
Yeah, again, a great news story for Irish business. So Ardmac, an Irish company headquartered in Swords in Dublin, they employ 500 people and revenue of 200 million. So again, big returns and big money, but it may be something we've never heard of. But they specialise in clean technical and working environments. So this clean room idea, particularly with, and they work in the data, microelectronics and electrical vehicle and battery commercial sectors. So they've been taken over by an international company, as you say, Purveyor. They can't even pronounce it, Industries, based, their headquarters are in Portugal at the moment, originally from Madrid, and they operate across 7 different countries and export their products to 80 different countries. So a real global player, talking obviously with all of these things like about synergies and increased capacity and access to more things. So a really good news story for this.
Absolutely.
Irish
and I see that Ardmac, the company that was taken over, around since 1977. So it doesn't happen overnight, Susan.
It doesn't, but doesn't this highlight, if, you know, Simon Harris is looking for ideas on taxes, is this is why I think the entrepreneur tax credit should be looked at. The entrepreneur tax relief, sorry, is because if you look exactly the point, this started in 1977. I don't know if the founder of this thought that they would be selling for an undisclosed sum, but this is the point, is that I think every entrepreneur should be thinking about succession planning. And if, as I say, if Taoiseach is listening today, have a look at the entrepreneur tax relief.
When I have you there, Susan, house sales prices slow, but prices continue to rise. So we've got sales coming down and prices going up, according to this piece in today's Irish Examiner.
Yes, the point here is that the number of transactions, now I think it's a bit over-egged here to say that they have slumped, but anyway, they're down by 13% over this particular time frame. Okay, well, basically the point here is that house prices are going up, the number of transactions are going down, so therefore we've got less data to understand this, but and the accuracy of it, but at the same time, no matter what, house prices are going up, and this is particularly driven today, we have got 2.7 million people in employment with an average full-time salary of €45,000 in Ireland today. It also, of course, points out to the fact that we've got lower supply. But I think this is the one number, Bobby, and we've talked about housing a lot in this show over the years. This time round, I think we are seeing some momentum behind starts here. There was 50,000 starts made in the 12 months to April of this year. And that's a point that's being made here, is that there is low supply. But I think that will change. And of course, then that can point to greater transactions in the future.
And Becky, John Lowe is telling us in today's mail, if you're buying a house, he's a 5-point checklist. I love the simplicity of this. Maybe walk us through that.
Really, really simple. So he's got the 5 points: affordability, your good name, savings record, deposit, and the financial commitments. I think a couple to hone in on. So we're looking at 3.5 or 4 times for first-time buyers of your salary, of your joint income, of the people who are purchasing. Your good name, good place to check. Check with the centralcreditregister.ie. We can all go in, log in and check how our credit score is looking. Savings record. So this is about, you need to prove for the last 6 months that you can save the amount that of your mortgage repayment.
And make sure you have no paddy power on your bank statement.
And there are certain things that will flag to the banks. Your deposit, you're looking at about a 12%, so 10% stamp duty plus legal fees and the stamp duty. And then your financial commitment. So again, what we're saying, ideally you want no other loans, but if you do have them, again, you need to be able, they will deduct 12-month loan payments from your annual income. So little top tips there. If you're
all right, that's good. Just let's move to America for a minute, Susan. Trump fails to mellow following his near-death experience. We also have then, you know, more talk about Biden and whether he's going to pull out of the race or not. And then we've another piece that tells us about the implication of all of this for Ireland. So maybe your collective thoughts on these three pieces.
Sure. Okay. Well, it's been a big week, obviously, in America with the assassination attempt, and then, of course, then him appointing his running mate, etc. In addition, then we've got Biden, who's currently under mounting pressure to step aside, as well as recovering from COVID at the moment. But I think the key part of this story is what Cliff Taylor writes here around what would Maganomics mean for Ireland, and he particularly talks about that very clearly articulated economic nationalism that Trump has been speaking about. I mean, there's an anomaly here in what Trump is putting forward, because of course he is dealing another environment of full employment, of 4.1% unemployment in the US. But Cliff Taylor's point here is that when you look at the reliance that we have on US companies, for example, so far year to date, 6.28 billion euros has been exported to the US, and that's up by 28%. Whereas Trump has said, like, he's made reference to the fact that Ireland in particular produces a lot of the drugs that are being sold and prescribed and taken in the US, and he wants to bring that supply chain back. But of course, the big challenge here is that if you do create more employment in the US, where are those? Who's going to work in those jobs, and will that lead to greater inflation and lower economic growth?
And Becky, as Susan tells us there, recent figures show that Ireland is the EU country most exposed to exports outside the Union, mostly to the US. This leaves Ireland more vulnerable to trade wars and tariffs and to the overall health of the US economy, where a volatile period could well be in prospect. I think that says it all there.
It really does. And I know Susan talked about the figure, but that's a quarter of our exports went to the US in the last 5 months. So it is a big percentage of it. Look, we don't know what will actually happen. None of us know what will actually happen. And certainly in Trump version one, the talk was greater than the action, if you like. And we certainly will hope for the same this time. But the talk is much more aggressive this time as well. And so I do think we need to watch that. I thought the last line was interesting, though, from Cliff Taylor. As we survive Brexit, if not unscathed, then not severely damaged, and with growth strong despite all that is going on in the world, it appears that the big economic risks of a Trump presidency are not being taken too seriously here. But he ends on a warning. After this extraordinary week, it is surely now time to do so.
Absolutely it is. We've 1 minute to talk about a big thing that's happening tomorrow. Sit back and savour. Susan.
Yeah.
All Ireland tomorrow, Cork versus Clare.
Well, I have such a lovely memory of when Mark Landers lifted the cup in 1999 and he said, "Welcome back, Liam McCarthy, we missed you in Cork." And I so hope that Sean O'Donoghue is going to do the same tomorrow. Bobby, I have to say, the hunt for tickets all over Cork. I was down this week, and I'll tell you a super brief story. I brought my dad down to visit and my granny and granddad's grave in Timoleague, and I brought him into Charlie Madden's pub. And as we walked in there, the barman greeted us with a greeting to say, "Hello, Michael, you're welcome back. Have you any tickets?"
That's brilliant. Well, how do you feel it's going to go? Do you think Cork are going to win?
Oh, I think the momentum is absolutely with Leith side. I really do. I mean, I think that I was there at that first Cork and Limerick match in Parkycweave. It was electric. And I think the momentum of what's going on at home is unbelievable. So rebels aboo all the way.
All right. Well, it's going to be a big day. Get out there and enjoy it, folks. Big thanks to my guests, Susan Hayes-Culleton, proud Corkonian, and indeed Rebecca Harrison. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.